שלום עליכם, רב ישראל, ברוך בית החידש, יצא השם. I want to frame Elul. I imagine in all of our minds is a time that holds a call. And call to improvement, tshuva, growth. Sometimes it can be a little bit, there can be a few things that can get confusing about it. First of all, where do you start? And also, we want to be moving through it in the right perspective, meaning, as we'll explain. We'll just give a faint mashal just to kick it off before we really start getting more into it. You have a person who... We hear about the Yom HaDin, right? So, Chaim, the Moves, these are very, very grave and weighty things. And if it's just approached in terms of you're going to be judged, how does a defendant feel before being brought before a judge in a capital case when his life is at stake? It's not a very good feeling, to say the least. There's no cause for joy when a person is facing charges and is facing a trial with everything at stake. And yet somehow we see that Rosh Hashanah does merge into a Yom Tov. It can get a little confusing. Is it a Yom Tov? Is it a Yom HaDin? How does everything come together? So let's just, without really getting into it now, just to throw out a faint marshal, is think of it not just in terms of a trial, but you think of it in terms of a person who's about to go into a test, is about to do a test after the years he's been studying, and now he's doing a test in some area that he specialized in. And if he passes this test, he's going to move into a niche. He's going to move into a profession that is the domain of a select few that puts him into a place of great prestige. He's going to be considered one of the most high class and sought after doctors in the world in this particular area. So this person is also moving into the test with trepidation, but it's not just about fear. Oh gosh. The whole focus is that if I fail this test, my parents will kill me. There's a lot more, right? He is thinking of very, very great things, of aspirations. So I'm just throwing this out. I'm just throwing this out before we really get into it. Now let's approach the subject and see how far we get into it this week, what we'll continue with next week. Let's see. So I also want to frame it. I want to put it in the right, what actually is going on here. So I'll start with two little incidents. There's a maisa that I heard about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Anybody who's familiar, has read up on Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, knows that he was known for his wit, for his penetrating wisdom, Chakim HaDiyudai, the wise man, the Pikeach. But he's known for his wit. So he was one time at some kind of gathering. There were many chashuv people there, and apparently it was a ceremony and pomp. And apparently, and I'm throwing out in the first place, I don't know if this story actually happened, no idea, but it holds a true point. In terms of the details of the story itself, we might prefer to assume that it didn't happen, but we'll tell the story anyways. Another important personage showed up, escorted by a whole group of his followers and admirers. They came in very aggressively protecting the Rebbe, right? And they walked by, making sure to clear anything and anybody out of the way. And as they came up onto the dais, one of the other Rabbanim who were there got pushed aside. So this Rav kind of spat out, he said, Chayes. So this Rebbe, his followers, he looked at him and he said, Chayas HaKodesh. Chayas HaKodesh is a very high level of malach. Okay. Now I'm gonna say that the continuation in Yiddish works better that way. Then I'll say it in English. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was sitting there and he said, Zeken zayn chayes hakodesh, or but mention zayn and zaynit. He said, it could be that they're chayes, maybe they're animals. It could be that they're very high angels, but mention they're not, right? Mensch, right? So that's a acute, sharp little vart. But let's note the fact that the word mensch, what does mensch mean? A person. And we use that in the Yiddish term, which all of us are familiar with. It works that way in Hebrew also. I don't think it works in English. But just to say a person, to denote a person of quality, right? A person with derech eretz, an upstanding, admirable, dignified, respectable person. We call him a mensch, which is what? A person. So I'm going to follow this up with another little mice. That Rabbi Avigdor Miller one time met at the time, the son of the Baba Vered. By now it's the father of the Baba Vered. I mean, this was when I was a kid and it was the grandfather of the current Rebbe, right? So Rabbi Avigdor Miller was at the time the son of the Baba Vered. He said to him, I want you to know that I hold your father in very high regard. For the son, it's like, what's the chiddush? He's the Rebbe, right? Rabbi Miller said, in my opinion, he's a true mensch. And then he said to him, he said, I know that for you, a chassid, the son of a Rebbe, what do you mean a Rebbe is a mensch? The Rebbe is a malach. The Rebbe is, you know, kodesh kadoshim. He said, but I want you to know that coming from me, that's a very great statement. I said that he's a true mensch. There's more to it than just the sound of it. The term Adam really is a term that we don't have enough of an appreciation for. Adam, person. Adam, mensch, is the greatest title that there is in terms of what Hashem created. Not everybody lives up to it. But we have to appreciate what the term really holds in it. I probably mentioned this in the past. When I, you know, the Lag BaOmer songs, we didn't hear Lag BaOmer songs in America. When I was growing up, America, the Lag BaOmer in America wasn't so emphasized. They took us on a trip or something. Well, it wasn't the whole culture like it is here. So I first heard Lag BaOmer songs, other than you know, the very basic, but the Bar Yochai and all that, I first heard when I came here. So I was really old enough to actually hear the words. It wasn't like words that I grew into. And there was one line there that continues to move me until now. It's a line that goes, when it's talking about Bar Yochai, Nasa Odom Nema Avurech. When Hashem said, let us make man, he was picturing you. Hashem was envisioning something. And he said, let us make man. He said, Rav Shimon ben Yochai, you actually materialized, you actually grew into that vision of what is an Adam. I'll bring this home from another angle. We have to appreciate that we are not, Adam is not the most intelligent form of life, but it is something that is shaykh to a completely different realm. We've mentioned a number of times Reb Chaim Volozhin and Nefesh HaChaim, where he describes how when you look in the mirror and you see your body, you think that's you, but that's not you. Reb Chaim Volozhin says that the goof, the body, is the shoe of the actual person. The shoe, it's all the way at the bottom, and it's not even the toe, it's like something surrounding it from the outside. We are a neshama. That's really who we are in essence. And that is something beyond comprehension. For purposes of our role in this world, we were put into a body, we were dressed in a body, and if you'll put it this way, you know, this is a mashal we've used a number of times. You know, we're talking about things that are way above our understanding, but if we'll just put it into a very mundane way of putting it, the neshama was like anesthetized. Like the real me right now, I'm sitting here and talking and I think this is me, but actually the real me is by and large under anesthesia right now, if we'll put it that way. Okay, this is obviously all borrowed, okay? But, and what I'm actually experiencing is a very, very low bottom level of who I really am. And I think that that's all there is to me. I think that that's me. The mashal that I've given for that a few times, this is how it strikes me, is like if you take a person and put him under general anesthesia except for one of his toes, right? You give the toe a little bit more of a life, and that toe thinks that that's all there is to the person, right? Pleasure is, I don't know, a massage, hot bath, that's the extent of pleasure. And pain is, of course, well, two types, of being stepped on or stepping on a piece of Lego. And that's basically the extent of good and bad and suffering and et cetera. That's all, right? And you try to explain to the toe that there is really, it's not that there's another level of existence, that you pale in comparison to what your life really is. And when the anesthesia wears off, the toe is almost like, so butta, how often have you, well, except for the time that someone stomped on you, how often are you actually conscious of your toe? So we are an neshama. Neshama is something that is beyond imagination. And just to approach it from a little bit of a different angle, bear with me. If you look in the Parshas Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis describes the Bria of the world, describes the creation. So the Torah moves very quickly through the various stages of creation. Shemayim Sa'aretz, land, the atmosphere, right? Clouds on top of the atmosphere, the topography, is that how you say it? The layout of the land. These are all described in Psukim in a few words each, right? Then it moves through all of plant life and then all of animal life. And the sun and the moon and all the heavenly bodies. Quick. The Torah is moving very quickly. You take each of those psukim, you can fill up volumes, right? But the Torah, short shrift. The Torah gives the minimum words possible in order to convey what it wants it to convey. It's moving very quickly, one thing to the next. All of a sudden, 1 minute, the Torah slows down. The Torah slows down in the description of the Bria, and all of a sudden, before the creation of man, there's this whole preface. Nasa Adam Betzameinu Kidmoseinu. When Hashem created the sun, it didn't say that, right? Nasa, we're going to create man and a whole plan for man. And from that point on, the focus is man. It's almost like disproportionate how there are so many other things in the Bria that are so much bigger, so much more immense, but they move quickly through. But the point here is that no, it might seem that way on the outside. If we appreciate what man is, the rest of the world really does pale in comparison. It really does pale in comparison. Everything else is just kind of like setting up, laying down the setting for the real grand part of the plan. And that's how the Gemara describes it, right? The Gemara describes the rest of the world like setting up a wedding hall before the chasan and the kala walk in. There's a lot of activity that goes on in a wedding hall before the chasan and kala walk in. Chasan and kala, only two people. There's a team of 30 workers. Right? And they're setting up, you have the band setting up the band, and they're setting the tables, it's all ASIC. And that whole thing is really just revolving around the appearance of those two people. That's what the purpose is. And this is what's going on in the creation of the world too. One step further, before we start bringing this home in a practical way. The Sefer HaKuzari, Sefer Kuzari, everybody here is familiar in a general way, that the Sefer is structured as a dialogue, as a debate between a non-Jewish king and a Jewish chacham. The non-Jewish king who's seeking the truth, and the Jewish chacham who is presenting the arguments of Yiddishkeit. There are a few themes that the Sefer is a breathtaking Sefer, that Mamish goes through the breadth and depth of Yiddishkeit. I'll just note that in parentheses, it's almost like an agenda of mine. People think of Kuzari as like a safer proving that there's Hashem, proving the truths of Yiddishkeit. That's a very superficial level of what the Kuzari is, and it's also a very small part of it. It's the first couple of chapters. It's a difficult sefer. It's hard to make your way through the chapters. So maybe stop there. That's all the sefer is. But the Kuzari is a breathtaking study of Yiddishkeit, and it provides so much richness to the Yiddishkeit that we're living on a day-to-day basis. That's really what it is. But le'im yaneinu. There are a few themes that are prominent throughout the sefer. There are threading the sefer. And one of them is that the king of Kuzar has a hard time, keeps coming back to it throughout the sefer, wrapping his head around that a god should be interested in human beings. Now, this man was a successful philosopher, probably had a better handle on what the meaning of God is than we do. And precisely because he understood how great, how immense an Elohim is, he couldn't swallow the approach of Yiddishkeit, which is that Hashem is intensely interested and intensely focused on us, the details of what we're doing, and that matters to him. This is something that was unfathomable to a person who had a very profound, broad appreciation of an Elohim. And this they're debating back and forth throughout the sefer. So at one point, the way he expresses it is that Hashem calls himself Elokei Yisrael. And that's how he identifies himself. Elokei Yisrael. Which means like Kiviyach. Again, we're going to get it in a very mundane kind of way. If you were to ask Hashem, what is your title? What do you do? Excuse me, put it this way, but I want to bring a point home. Right? What does it say on your business card? What does it say? It says, my title is, I am Elokei Yisrael. You see that those people there? You have to look way down, because when you're talking to them, first of all, you have to notice that there's a Milky Way. Tiny, tiny, tiny. Somewhere down there, there's a Milky Way. You see that tiny Milky Way? Now, in that Milky Way, I don't know if you can imagine, you need a microscope, but there's something called an Earth there. You need a high-powered microscope. On Earth, look even closer, there's things moving around. There's actually billions of forms of life, right? Of living beings. Now, there's a nation there among them called Am Yisrael. You wonder who I am? I am the Elohim of those people. That's who I am. That's how I identify myself. So the king of Kuzar is saying, what does that mean? It makes no sense. And the Chacham comes and says, yes, that is Torah. That Hashem prides himself, out of the whole Bria, he prides himself on his nation, on Am Yisrael. And he considers the creation of an Am Yisrael a greater demonstration of his greatness than the sun and the moon and all of the great wonders of the world. And this is something that we have to appreciate. And this is where it starts coming home to us. Hashem is basically coming and saying, and here is he, Hashem Kiviyachol, wanted to have a reality of Kavod Shamayim, where you see the honor and the glory of Kvod Shamayim. Why did he want that? Setting that aside for right now. We also know that his primary agenda in creating the world was that he wanted to do chesed. The two come together. But you know what? We're not getting into those discussions right now. But right now we're just saying, we find that those are the two big agendas in the Bria. Kvod Shamayim and chesed. But right now we're focusing on the Kvod Shamayim. What is the medium of Kvod Shamayim that Hashem created this whole business for? A nation called Am Yisrael. They're the ones, more than all of the amazing Brias that he has, all the unbelievable wonders that there are out there, the greatest wonder of all is Hashem's Am. This Jew, that Jew, these are the greatest demonstrations of my glory. What's the idea? So to take us a little bit further and to start bringing it a little bit more down to earth, to understand what this actually means in our lives, What it means is basically that Hashem is saying the greatest wonder of all is that we take man, which is essentially, look at it as is, something called 100 to 300 pounds of flesh and blood, and you can make out of it something so godly. The fact that that can happen is the greatest wonder that we have, that there is, that exists. I've said this in the past, that one of the I think it was perhaps the Tzemach Tzedek, maybe they'll help us with this afterwards, perhaps it was the Tzemach Tzedek who was asked, how come in Lubavitch they put less of a stress on Moifsin? Moifsin, wonder stories, miracle stories about the Rebbes were a very prominent feature among many of the Hasidic strains. So how come in Lubavitch there was much less talk about it? You didn't hear so much about it. So again, it was one of the Rebbes, maybe the Tzemach Tzedek, who said that by us, the greatest wonder of all is that you can take a piece of flesh and turn that into an Adam. That is the biggest mitzvah of all. Kind of line that up, right, with the story of the Chafetz Chaim and his son, right? When someone is the Chafetz Chaim's son, right? You know the famous story? It's the Chafetz Chaim's son. What's with your father's moifsin, right? People tell all kinds of beautiful stories about your father, but why don't we hear about his miracles? That's impressive. You know, that's what you want to show something to yourself. Let's see. Two miracles a day. So the Chafetz Chaim's son responded, the miracle of my father, he said, the famous dictum, Tzadik Goyzev Hashem Ekayim. What's with your father? What's his track record? Tzadik Goyzev Hashem Ekayim, right? The Tzadik decrees and Hashem makes it happen. So the Chofetz Chaim's son responded, he said, my father's moifis, the wonder of my father's life is the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Goyzev HaTzadik Mekayim. It's the extent to which you see that Hashem decrees and quite to what extent the Tzadik can fulfill it. That's the wonder, that's the miracle of my father's life. He takes that to miraculous extents. And this is really the miracle of the Jewish nation. Hashem says, I can take a people and make out of them something that you, Malachim, would never believe it possible. People can become something so great, so godly, that Shekhinah Pashit shines through them. And I can do it with something that's made out of flesh and blood. And I'm connecting it to something as immense as the neshama, and putting it in the hands of this flesh and blood to really make the neshama shine in its full glory, which is the most glorious bria that exists. And Malach comes, or even we come and say, how can we possibly do that? It's completely unrealistic. How can flesh and blood do that? And Hashem says, my flesh and blood can do that. And I am, as Hashem, telling you that this is my covenant. This is my might, that I can make such an immense bria out of what appears to be just flesh and blood. And this is actually the achrayus that's being placed into our hands. Can we live up to the title, to the various glorious title of Adam, of Nasa Adam, which is Hashem's vision in the whole Bria, everything that he created, all the malachim are really there just to serve as backdrop, as the setting for the performance of the ultimate Kvod Shemayim, and that is man becoming that great Bria called man. Man living up to that immense title called Adam. The highest title possible under Hashem. What does that mean in practical terms? Okay, so what do I do? Right? So bear with me another minute before, maybe a little more, before we actually start getting practical. But now let's start framing Elul and the Yom Nirvan, if we understand this. Hashem is a world. What is the purpose of that world? The purpose of the world are those Adams who are operating inside it. That is where Hashem's hopes are realized. That is where Hashem's kiviyocho, his investment is realized. If Hashem has a world of B'nai Yisrael, of one Jew and another Jew and another Jew, who are living up to that, who are yes, bringing the Shekhinah and letting the Shekhinah shine through them. In our world, this is the world that Hashem was envisioning. And when we talk about Rosh Hashanah, we're talking about moving into a new year. What's a new year? A new year is a new creation. What is Elul about? Tavshin Pei Gimel is a completely new entity. Worlds, universe, put it into funny terms. Universe is something disposable. It's got a one-year use. And then you throw it out and replace it with a new one. That's that. Existence is in cycles of a year. That's why the word shana is a year. It also means repetition. I mean, history, the whole course of time is not just one straight line going. But no, it goes in a circle and starts again. Starts again. It's renewed. Shana is from the term elishanois, shinun. It starts again. Starts again. Meaning, you reach shkia. I shouldn't say it's not really Rosh Hashanah because the gzar din, the whole din really takes effect by Yom Kippur. But whatever, let's say for our purposes, again, we're trying to pinpoint exactly where it happens. At Mehila, Ben Hashmashes, approaching Tzeis HaKachavim. Theoretically, Tzeis HaKachavim hits. You know, you're expecting Baruch Hu of Ma'ariv, and that's it. It's all finished. There's no continuation. You step out of shul on Motzei Yom Kippur, so you should step out carefully. Make sure that there's a ground out there. Okay. Now, in my experience, there always was. But you have to realize you're stepping into a new world. You're stepping into a new bria called Tavshin Pei Gimel. Well, what's coming is a new bria called Tavshin Pei Gimel. And what's going on now is that Hashem is setting up this Tavshin Pei Gimel. And the question is, what does he have? What are the resources, kiviyochol, available to him in terms of that Tavshin Pei Gimel? There isn't going to be a Moshe Rabbeinu available there. Unless Bezos Hashem, we should be zecher to tchias HaMeisim beforehand. But we're now operating just in case not. There's not going to be a Moshe Rabbeinu there. What's Hashem going to get out of that breed? There isn't going to be a, right? It's not going to be a Rambam, not going to be a Moshe Feinstein. It's not going to be a Chacham Shalom Cohen. So what's the worth of that world? What would be the significance of a Tavshin Pei Gimel? So you know what? In El, we're coming and telling Hashem, I can present you with another Adam in that world. And that's what Hashem wants. He wants another of his Adam, of the Ben Yisrael, who's living up to that Tzuras Adam. And we're coming and telling Hashem, here's what I can offer you, kiviyochol. Here's what I can offer you in terms of a worthwhile world. You will have a true Adam operating in that world. That justifies the existence of the world. That justifies the creation of a world. A yechidi mi Yisrael, right? The Gemara tells us that this is we all require to have this mentality that I justify the creation of the entire universe. If I can come and tell Hashem, you will have another true Adam operating in your world, then Hashem says, that justifies a world. That justifies the creation of the Tavshin Pei Gimel. And certainly, there are more than one. There are a few of us. And everything else, we have to realize all the big world news and all the big world events is just background. Those are not really, it's not really the big things that are going on in the world. It's batel to us. The story of the world is each Adam operating in it and his own successes. It's climbing the ladder to a greater and greater Tzuras Adam. Everything else, who is the president of the United States? What deals is he making with who? What wars are going on where? Is all the setting in which the real story is actually happening. I'll throw out that's one reason. You can call it a side reason, but that's actually one reason not to be too immersed in following news, in world events. you know what's going on in a general way. But when you are caught up with world events, when you're caught up with the news and analyzing and hashing and this, you're actually creating a misconception for yourself, as though those are the big things. And I am a bystander who's watching it and understanding it and analyzing it. You're declaring, in a way, that this is what's happening in the world, and I want to know it and be a part of it. And well, it's actually exactly mamish. Mamish, the opposite. That is batel to you. You're the story of the world. If you're an Adam operating as an Adam of Hashem, then all the rest of that is just like, it's weather, right? Weather is something world-encompassing. It's massive. It has implications on all of our lives, much more than the war in Ukraine does, right? And you have to keep up with the weather. You have to know how to go outside. You have to know what I should put on before I go outside. But I can have people who are just obsessed with the weather, busy discussing all the ups and downs and the ins and outs, because that's really, really is. You just look in terms of volume, of quantity. Those are the big things going on. We're tiny. But we naturally relate to it as weather is about what am I going to be wearing now? And it's a very small part of my consciousness as I'm moving through the day. The same is true for all the so-called big world events. The same is true for the status of the so-called world leaders. The story of the world, the purpose of the world is about the true Adam operating in it. What does all this mean? Okay, so I want to be an Adam. So what? So we'll throw this out for now. Maybe we'll continue with it next week, depending on where we're actually holding when we finish. But Adam is, we alluded to it earlier. That's the challenge. You are a neshama, but the state of that neshama is being put into the hands of flesh and blood. Being told, can you bring out the godliness that's in you and let that actually define you, let that actually characterize you? What does that mean? Practical terms. So I'm going to borrow. What it means is, if we'll use a very vague term that we're all familiar with and we all understand, but it doesn't really give us clear direction, it means shleimus, which we translate practically as growth. We grow and bring out the potential greatness inside of us. What does that mean practically? What am I trying to transform myself into? So we've mentioned a few times three main bullets that Rabbi Avigdor Miller would give. And I'm going to start with one of them now, probably really just leading into next week's session. But let's talk about Midas. Let's talk about Midas. Midas, in a very general way, is understood as you have to be nice to the people around you. Midas is something much deeper than that. Midas is one of the big defining characteristics of an Adam. Meaning what? How I'm acting to the person next to me is the very bottom, it's kind of like the gauge of where my Midas are and who I am. But it goes much deeper than that. And we'll put it like this. What are we, if you just take the material level of us, right? As a pile of flesh and blood. It's a zoo of all kinds of different animals running in different directions, right? We have, you know, my all my different inclinations and natural urges are running in all kinds of directions, and you know, the taivas ha'achila and my ego and my laziness, all these things are pulling me into all kinds of different places, sometimes fighting against each other, sometimes they're on the same team. Whatever it is, man is just a mess of all kinds of different forces pulling him in all kinds of different places. And his taiva can get him to one place, his ego can get him somewhere else, all kinds of different messes. And his laziness. And you can kind of think of it like a person who wants to create a very, very great army. So what does he do? He takes the top Air Force captain that's around, hires him, gives him a lot of money to build an Air Force, takes the top naval officer that he can get a hold of, hires him, build a great Navy. These people are getting the most skilled soldiers and the top equipment, etc. And they have all the different pieces, okay? But there's no commander-in-chief. That's the only thing that's missing. He doesn't have the funds for that yet. But he has, by now, he has an amazing Air Force, an amazing Navy, an amazing, the guys who just shoot the guns, an amazing people in tanks. I don't know what the all the different things are called, but all the different parts and pieces of the army and commando units, has the best one, just SWAT. The only problem, one little piece missing, and that's the one who brings it all together and makes the plans. But he says, okay, guys, we're going now to conquer this country. We have it. We have all the skill we need. Okay. So the Air Force, he's going to go in with the Air Force in full force. And the naval officer is going to take in his Navy with full force. And at the same time, you're going to have the tank commander leading his unit in with full force. Right? So the Air Force, you know, they're coming and they want to start bombing, but they all of a sudden they see the tanks are on the way. So he radios the tank guy. So I just don't know all the terms, okay? He said, move out of the way, we want to bomb. So what do you mean you want to bomb? We're taking this town by ourselves. And pretty quickly, the thing turns into one big mess, right? The Air Force have one agenda, the infantry has a different agenda, and then you have the Navy is shooting missiles at all of them from the sea, and the whole thing turns into one big balagan. The question is, can you have the commander-in-chief who comes and says, we have a lot of amazing kaychas here, but left unchecked and left to just figure things out on their own, we're going to have one big self-destructive mess, right? So he comes and says, wait, first we have an airstrike. Tanks? Wait now. Now you guys have to hold yourself back. This is not your place right now. Okay. Once the Air Force are finished, now is the time. We need the tanks to go in and clean up, right? So you guys move out of the picture. Why move out of the picture? You know what a great Air Force we are? That's right. And I'm moving you out of the picture right now. You have the right commander-in-chief. He can turn this from one big motley mess into a perfectly well-oiled army that operates with precision, that plans are carried out exactly. You can have very, very tough goals, conquering a very, very big country. You have the ability to do it because you have a commander-in-chief who's on top of it all and unleashing on the one hand and holding back on the other hand all the different forces that are here. So what'd you do? You took a gang and turned it into a high-quality army. And you took a balagan, a very powerful balagan, and you turned it into a very, very successful ending. So, when we're talking about a person with all of his different passions, urges, inclinations, desires, one conflicting with the other, et cetera, and to be able to come and say, we can take all these things and turn them into, harness them, get them under control, and turn them into a disciplined army whose function is Hashem's agenda in this world. My desire for food is going to be a unit in that army. My ego is going to be a unit in that army. My intellect, my emotion, right? My strengths and my weaknesses. My weaknesses are an important unit. They're not something to disregard. My weaknesses are an important unit in that army. Some of my greatest successes are going to come by means of my weaknesses. That's where sometimes we gain our greatest claim to fame, is by identifying our weaknesses and working with them. So I have my strengths and I have my weaknesses. I have my physical urges and I have my intellect and I have my emotions, etc. One big mess, right? Instead of it just letting being a ping pong going in all directions, I'm going to turn this into one brilliant, shining vehicle of Ratzon Hashem. And this is Avodas Hamidus. Avodas Hamidus means going from something that just operates naturally, operates based on whatever urge is functioning at the moment, and turning it into something that is a disciplined soldier of Hashem. It would mamish thing, how you take a zoo, and you turn it into an Adam, something that reflects Elokus, all of our negative midos can be contributing, certainly the positive midos when they're done right. She said in both directions. The positive midos left unchecked can just contribute to the bedlam of the zoo. The negative midos, when done right, can be a very important contribution to that perfect function of that entity of Avodas Hashem that's called you. We have to really start breaking this down into practical examples to show how this works in practice. But right now we're just throwing out the concept. And that's what we're going to tie up with for this week. But it's the understanding that Hashem put at my disposal, said, I want you to bring forth the elokus in you, the godliness in you, the neshama in you, let the Shekhinah shine through you. If you can take all those different forces that right now you think are you, right? You think that this desire is you. You think your laziness is who you are. You think your ego is you. I said, no. There's a higher me who's going to one by one stop putting each of those things in their place and bringing it under control and saying all these things are really just kalim. They are just vehicles of the central command, the neshama. I'm going to bring them all under its control and let it just direct them. Plan them all along this program of where all of them are going to be operating in sync to create that picture of the disciplined Oyved Hashem. This is someone who has taken, like we said before, someone who has taken a pile of meat and turned it into that very, very sublime bria called Tzuras Adam. Again, we just mentioned the concept now. I have to break it down a bit more and then introduce the other two bullet points. Well, either we will continue with that next week or we won't if some other subject knocks it out of the way. Okay, we'll stop.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Abitabal.
Thank you.
Thank you.